A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been buying what's supposedly the best plastic outdoor storage available in Israel, and it's disintegrating. The plastic literally breaks off in chunks. He's gone through two rounds of products, and he's asking what material actually works for outdoor cabinets, benches, and a washing machine enclosure that won't rust and won't burn your skin off when you touch it in August. Smart question, because the answer is absolutely not whatever he's been buying.
He is far from alone. May's UV index readings across the Middle East and Southern Europe have been brutal. Tel Aviv is averaging 7.2, with summer peaks hitting 11+. That's extreme by the WHO classification. Meanwhile, the global outdoor storage market hit $14.2 billion in 2024, projected to reach $18.1 billion by 2027. Most of it is plastic that's going to end up exactly like Daniel's bitch, in a landfill after 3 years.
The tragedy here is that this isn't a brand problem, it's a material science problem. People keep buying quote-unquote premium plastic storage and expecting it to behave like marine equipment. It won't. It can't. The chemistry is fundamentally against you.
Let's start with what's actually happening when that plastic crumbles in your hands. You've got three failure modes working together. First, UV photodegradation, specifically UVB photons in the 290 to 315 nanometer range. Those photons carry enough energy to break carbon-carbon bonds in polypropylene and polyethylene. The polymer chains literally get chopped into shorter and shorter segments, and the material loses its structural integrity.
It's not fading. It's being dismantled at the molecular level.
Second, thermocycling fatigue. In Israel, the day-night temperature swing can be 20 degrees Celsius. The plastic expands during the day, contracts at night, expands, contracts, contracts. Every single cycle creates microstresses in the material. And third, once the surface is degraded and microcracked, wind load finishes the job. The weakened plastic can't handle the mechanical stress, and chunks break off.
Daniel mentioned this is for a washing machine enclosure too, which adds humidity to the equation. You've got UV from above, heat from the sun, and moisture from the machine, trapped inside a plastic box that's already losing the fight. It's like putting a cardboard box in a sauna and being surprised when it collapses.
The humidity accelerates everything. Water molecules penetrate those microcracks, and when the temperature drops at night, the trapped moisture condenses and expands. It's a hydraulic wedging effect inside the material. Plus, many polymers are hygroscopic. They absorb moisture, which plasticizes the polymer matrix and makes it even weaker.
Let's talk about why quote-unquote UV-stabilized plastic still fails, because that's the part that feels like a betrayal. You paid extra for the UV protection and it's still crumbled.
This is where most consumers get misled. UV stabilizers, things like hindridamine light stabilizers, HALEs, and benzotriazoles. They work by absorbing UV photons or by scavenging the free radicals that form when polymer chains break. But here's the catch, they're consumed in the process. Every UV photon they absorb is one less they can handle in the future. It's sacrificial chemistry.
Like sunscreen that you never reapply.
That's exactly the analogy. SPF 50 doesn't last all day, and neither do UV stabilizers. A typical quote-unquote UV-stabilized outdoor plastic product has enough stabilizer loading for roughly 2 to 5 years in a UV zone, 10-plus climate like Israel. After that, the stabilizers are depleted, and the base polymer is naked in the sun.
What about these premium brands that use a co-extruded UV layer? I've seen that on product descriptions. A thin ASA shell over IBS.
That's the cruelest trick in the industry. ASA, acrylonitrile styrene acrylate, genuinely does have better UV resistance than ABS or polypropylene. But the co-extruded layer is typically only 0.2 to 0.5 millimeters thick. Once that thin shell erodes, and it will, given enough UV exposure, the ABS underneath photodegrades rapidly. ABS is terrible in UV. It yellows, it becomes brittle, it cracks. The ASA layer is a delay tactic, not a solution.
You're buying a product with a built-in expiration date, and the expiration date is printed in invisible ink that says roughly whenever the ASA skin wears through.
There's a recent study that puts hard numbers on this. In 2023, the Technion's Materials Science Department tested 12 commercial outdoor storage units in Haifa. After 18 months, all the polypropylene units showed surface cracking. After 36 months, 8 of the 12 had structural failures. The ASA units lasted longer, about 48 months before visible degradation, but they still failed. Compare that to a 20-year-old fiberglass enclosure on a kibbutz in the Negev. Minor gel coat erosion, but structurally sound.
4 years versus 20 years, and counting. That's not a comparison, that's an indictment.
There's another factor making everything worse that nobody talks about, the thermal mass problem. Dark plastic in direct Israeli sun can reach surface temperatures of 70 to 80 degrees Celsius. The chemical degradation rate roughly doubles or triples for every 10 degrees Celsius rise. That's the Arrhenius equation at work. So it's not just UV plus heat additively, it's UV times heat. The heat accelerates the photochemistry.
The bench isn't just sitting in the sun. It's cooking in the sun while being bombarded by UV, and the stabilizers are burning through their budget faster because of the temperature.
That's why Daniel's bench failed faster than expected. The manufacturer probably tested it in a temperate climate, or ran accelerated weathering tests that didn't account for the UV heat synergy you get in the Middle East. A QUV test chamber can simulate UV. But if it's not also simulating the 70-degree surface temperature of a dark plastic box in Tel Aviv in July, the results are optimistic by a factor of 2 or 3.
We've established that plastic is fundamentally the wrong material for this application. But what about the alternatives? Let's walk through the 3 material families that actually work, and why each one has a specific use case.
Before we get to the solutions, let's quickly address metal, because Daniel mentioned the burning hot problem and he's right to be concerned. Bare steel is obviously out. It rusts. Galvanized steel has a zinc coating that protects the steel, but any scratch exposes the base metal and you get rust bleeding from the scratch site. Stainless steel 304 is better, but in coastal Israel, the chlorides in the air will cause surface pitting within 5 to 10 years. Only 316 stainless, which contains molybdenum, is truly marine grade. Aluminum 606-1T6 is interesting. It naturally forms an aluminum oxide layer that protects it from further corrosion. It's lightweight, strong, and doesn't rust. The problem is thermal conductivity, 205 watts per meter, Kelvin. That means it transfers heat extremely efficiently. A bare aluminum surface in direct sun will absolutely burn you.
We need to solve the heat problem if we're going to use metal. But let's get to the 3 material families that actually work. What's first?
Fiberglass reinforced polyester, FRP. This is what boats are made of. It's a polyester resin reinforced with glass fibers with a UV-resistant gel coat on the surface. The gel coat is the key. It's a pigmented resin layer that's applied to the mold before the fiberglass layup, and it's specifically formulated to resist UV. Marine-grade gel coat can last 15 to 20 years before it needs recoating. The material doesn't rust. It has very low thermal conductivity, so the surface only runs about 10 degrees Celsius above ambient, and it can be molded into essentially any shape. FRP fabrication is labor-intensive. You're looking at 3 to 5 times the cost of plastic for an equivalent-sized enclosure. And you generally need professional fabrication. This isn't a weekend DIY project unless you're comfortable with fiberglass layup, which is a whole skill set involving respirators and catalysts and a steep learning curve.
If you can afford it, it's a buy-it-once solution.
There's a great case study here. A custom FRP storage cabinet was installed at the Weizmann Institute's Desert Research Station in 2008. It's still in service. Annual maintenance consists of washing it with mild detergent and reapplying wax once a year. Total cost in 2008 was about $2,800 versus $400 for the plastic alternative that failed in 3 years. Do the math over 20 years and the FRP cabinet has been dramatically cheaper per year of service.
You're not hauling plastic carcasses to the landfill every 3 years? What's the second material family?
Powder-coated aluminum with thermal management. This is the solution to the hot metal problem. The key is 3 things working together. First, you need adequate wall thickness, at least 3 millimeters, to provide structural rigidity and thermal mass. Second, the powder coat needs to be TGIC polyester, applied at 80 to 120 microns thickness, and it needs to incorporate IR reflective pigments.
IR reflective, that's the new development.
Relatively new for consumer applications. Sherwin-Williams and PPG both introduced commercial IR reflective powder coat formulations in 2024. These pigments reflect infrared radiation rather than absorbing it, which can reduce the surface temperature of a metal cabinet by 15 to 20 degrees Celsius compared to a standard dark powder coat. That's the difference between uncomfortable and untouchable.
The third thing?
For anything that's going to be touched. A bench, a cabinet door handle, you add a thermal break. On a bench, that means wooden or composite slats across the seating surface. Your body never contacts the metal directly. On a cabinet, you use wooden or HDPE door faces attached to the aluminum frame. The frame does the structural work, the facing material handles the human interface.
The metal is the skeleton and the wood or composite is the skin.
And this hybrid approach gives you the best of both materials. The aluminum frame won't rust, won't degrade in UV, and handles the structural loads. The wood or composite face doesn't get hot, looks good, and can be replaced separately if it ever does degrade.
The third material family.
High-density polyethylene with a serious UV-stabilized co-extrusion and thick walls. I want to be clear, this is not the HDPE you see in consumer storage bins. This is industrial-grade HDPE with a minimum 6 mm wall thickness, ideally 8 mm or more. It's the material used in Trex decking and some commercial outdoor furniture lines. The co-extruded UV barrier layer is thicker and better formulated than consumer products. And critically, the wall thickness means there's more material to lose before structural failure occurs.
It's still a sacrificial approach, but the sacrifice takes 15 years instead of 3.
You're buying time through mass. And at end of life, HDPE is recyclable, which is a meaningful advantage over fiberglass, which is notoriously difficult to recycle. But the trade-off is that it's still ultimately a finite life product. 10 to 15 years is realistic in an extreme UV climate. And that assumes you're also applying a separate UV protective coating that gets reapplied every 12 to 18 months.
Something like 303 Aerospace Protectant?
That's the one. It's a UV-blocking liquid that was originally developed for aerospace applications. It's not a permanent solution. You have to reapply it regularly. But it significantly extends the life of plastic and rubber surfaces. For someone who insists on using plastic for budget reasons, it's the single best thing you can do to stretch the lifespan.
That covers the material science. But theory is one thing. What does this mean for the listener's specific 3 items? Let's go item by item.
Let's start with the bench, because it's the trickiest. It has to support weight, it has to not burn skin, and it has a storage compartment underneath. My recommendation is a wooden bench built from ipe or thermally modified ash.
Ipe. That's Brazilian walnut.
Junka hardness of 3,680 pounds force. For comparison, red oak is 1,290. This stuff is ridiculously dense and durable. It has a Class 1 durability rating, meaning 25 plus years in ground contact. It has a Class A fire rating, same as concrete and steel. And it doesn't get hot in the sun the way metal or plastic does. The natural oils in the wood protect it from rot and insects.
The storage compartment underneath.
Line it with marine-grade plywood sealed with epoxy. Use stainless steel, 316 hinges, and hardware throughout. The wood will silver naturally over time. That's cosmetic, not structural. If you want to maintain the original color, you apply a UV-inhibiting oil once a year. If you don't, it goes a handsome silver-gray and lasts just as long.
What about thermally modified ash?
Akoya is the brand name most people know. It's sustainably sourced radiata pine or ash that's been through a process called acetylation, which chemically alters the wood's cell structure. The process makes the wood essentially indigestible to fungi and insects, and dramatically reduces its tendency to absorb water. It also gets a 25 to 50 year warranty depending on the application. It's lighter than ipe, easier to work with, and more sustainably sourced. The downside is it's slightly less hard, but for a bench that's not a problem.
If you wanted to go the metal route for the bench frame with a wooden seat.
Powder-coated aluminum frame with ipe slats. The frame handles the structure and the storage compartment. The slats are what you sit on. Best of both worlds, and the frame will outlast all of us.
Now the washing machine enclosure. This one has the added complication of humidity and ventilation.
This is where fiberglass really shines. I'd recommend a louvered FRP enclosure with a stainless steel 316 frame. The louvers are critical. They provide continuous ventilation to manage the humidity from the washing machine, while blocking direct UV from hitting the machine itself. You want airflow, but you don't want sunlight.
The louvers also reduce wind load, which is relevant given what we said about stress cracking.
Louvered panels let wind pass through rather than catching it like a sail. The stainless steel 316 frame provides the structural skeleton, and the FRP panels bolt to it. The whole thing sits on a concrete or stone base that elevates the washing machine off the ground by at least 10 centimeters. That prevents ground moisture from wicking up into the enclosure and accelerates drainage if any water spills.
The concrete base is doing double duty, moisture barrier and thermal mass.
It's cheap. A precast concrete pad is maybe $50 and it'll last forever. The FRP enclosure itself is the expensive part, but if you're building for an aspirational property, this is a one-time expense. For a general-purpose outdoor storage cabinet, I'd go powder-coated aluminum with a wooden or HDPE door face. The cabinet body is aluminum. It won't rust, it's light enough to move if needed, and the powder coat with IR reflective pigments keeps surface temperatures manageable. The door face is either IPE, Akoya, or thick HDPE, something that won't burn your hand when you open it in August. This is the hill I will die on. Stainless steel 316 for every single piece of hardware. Hinges, latches, handles, screws, everything. Zinc-plated hardware will fail within 2 years in a coastal environment. I've seen $500 cabinets rendered useless because a $2 zinc hinge corroded and the door fell off. The hardware is never where you should save money.
That's one of those lessons that sounds obvious, but everyone learns the hard way. You buy the nice cabinet, the hinge rusts, suddenly the cabinet doesn't close, water gets in, everything inside is ruined. The hinge takes the whole system down.
The single most cost-effective upgrade in any outdoor storage project is switching from zinc-plated to stainless steel 316 hardware. It's maybe $30 more for an entire cabinet's worth of hinges and screws, and it's the difference between a cabinet that works for 20 years and one that's jammed shut after two.
Let's talk numbers for a minute. What does this actually cost versus what Daniel probably spent?
A consumer-grade plastic outdoor cabinet, the quote-unquote premium stuff, runs about $300 for a 180-centimeter unit. It comes with a 1-year warranty, maybe two if they're feeling generous. A powder-coated aluminum cabinet from a commercial manufacturer. Keter has a commercial line that's separate from their consumer products. Runs about $1,200 for the same size, with a 15-year warranty.
4 times the cost. 15 times the warranty length. That tells you something about what the manufacturer actually expects.
The FRP custom fabrication route is more expensive up front. That Wiseman Institute cabinet was $2,800 in 2008 dollars. Adjusted for inflation, call it $4,000 today. But it's been in service for 18 years with no signs of failure. The annual cost is around $220, and dropping every year it continues to function. The $300 plastic cabinet replaced every 3 years costs $100 a year, plus the hassle of disposal and reinstallation.
The expensive option is actually cheaper if your time horizon is longer than about 5 years.
That's the core insight. The consumer outdoor storage market is built on planned obsolescence. The products are designed for a 3 to 5 year replacement cycle, because that's what the average homeowner in a temperate climate will tolerate. Put those same products in an extreme UV environment, and the replacement cycle shrinks to 2 to 3 years. The economics never work.
Before we wrap up, let's distill this into actionable takeaways. If you're listening and you have a similar problem, here's exactly what to do.
First, for any outdoor storage you're serious about, specify marine-grade or commercial-grade materials. Consumer-grade plastic is designed for planned replacement. Marine-grade means the material was designed for a 20-year service life in the harshest environment on Earth, salt water and full sun. If it can handle a boat deck in the tropics, it can handle your backyard in Tel Aviv.
Second, the hardware is not an afterthought. Stainless steel 316 for everything. If you're buying a pre-made cabinet and the manufacturer can't tell you what grade of stainless the hinges are, assume they're zinc-plated and budget to replace them immediately. A corroded hinge makes a cabinet unusable, even if every panel is pristine.
Third, for the DIY inclined, consider concrete or stone. Concrete has infinite UV resistance. It's literally rock. It doesn't get hot the way metal does because it has enormous thermal mass. It can be cast into any shape. A concrete bench with a storage compartment is a weekend project for a skilled mason, and the materials cost is surprisingly low. Add a wooden seat and door, and you've got something that will outlast the house.
Concrete doesn't care about humidity, salt air, or temperature swings. It's the ultimate zero-maintenance outdoor material. Ugly if done poorly, but a good mason can make it look architectural.
Fourth, if you must use plastic, maybe budget constraints, maybe you're renting and can't install permanent structures. Choose HDPE with a minimum 6mm wall thickness and commit to a maintenance schedule. Apply 303 aerospace protectant or marine grade UV clear coat every 12 to 18 months. Inspect the surface for microcracking. Accept that you'll get 10 to 15 years, not forever.
Fifth, before you buy anything, ask the manufacturer for their ASTM D2561 UV resistance test data and their ISO 4892 accelerated weathering results. If they can't provide them, or if they hedge, the product will fail. A company that's done the testing is proud of the results and will share them. A company that hasn't done the testing is selling you a landfill placeholder.
Those test standards exist precisely for this reason. ASTM D2561 measures a material's resistance to UV degradation under specific conditions. ISO 4892 simulates years of outdoor exposure in a controlled chamber. If a manufacturer sells quote-unquote outdoor storage but hasn't run these tests, they're either ignorant of their own product's limitations or they know the results are bad. Neither is acceptable.
To be clear, the big plastic brands know exactly what they're doing. They've run the tests. They know their product fails after 3 years in high UV environments. The business model depends on it. If the product lasted 20 years, they'd sell one per customer per lifetime. Instead, they sell one every 3 years.
There's a broader question here that I think is worth sitting with. As climate change pushes UV indexes higher globally, and we're already seeing this in the data, is consumer-grade plastic going to become completely obsolete for outdoor use? The EU is already moving toward mandatory 10-year durability requirements for outdoor furniture. Other jurisdictions will follow. The economics of selling disposable outdoor storage may not survive the regulatory environment of the next decade.
The materials industry is responding. The next frontier is self-healing polymers, materials that contain microencapsulated healing agents that are released when cracks form. The capsule walls break, the healing agent flows into the crack, and it polymerizes on contact with air or UV light. First commercial products are expected around 2028 to 2030.
There's also fascinating work happening at ETH Zurich on bio-based UV stabilizers derived from lignin. That's the structural polymer in wood pulp. Lignin is nature's UV protectant. It's what lets trees stand in full sun for centuries without their cellulose breaking down. The researchers are developing ways to incorporate modified lignin into synthetic polymers as a renewable, non-toxic UV stabilizer that doesn't get consumed the way current stabilizers do.
The future might be plastic that heals itself and uses wood-derived sunscreen. But for right now, the solution is to stop thinking like a furniture buyer and start thinking like a shipbuilder. Boats sit in the harshest environment imaginable. Salt water, full sun, constant mechanical stress, and they last for decades because the materials are chosen for the environment, not for the price point.
The listener's frustration is completely valid. He was sold a product designed for a climate that doesn't exist, or rather, designed for a climate where it only needs to survive long enough that the customer doesn't return it. The solution isn't to find a better plastic brand. It's to move to an entirely different class of materials. Marine-grade fiberglass, powder-coated aluminum with thermal management, tropical hardwood or thermally modified wood, stainless steel 316 hardware. These aren't exotic materials. They're standard in commercial and marine applications. They're just not what shows up in the home improvement store's outdoor storage aisle.
The cost difference, while real, disappears when you calculate cost per year of service. Buy a $300 plastic cabinet every 3 years for 15 years, and you spend $1,500 and made 5 trips to the landfill. buy a $1,200 powder-coated aluminum cabinet once, and you've spent less money and zero landfill trips.
Plus, you haven't had to look at crumbling plastic in your yard for 12 of those 15 years.
There's a dignity to owning things that don't fall apart. It's hard to quantify, but it's real. Every time you see that cracked plastic corner, it registers. Every time you open a cabinet and the hinge sticks, it's a tiny friction. The aspirational property Daniel mentioned, that's partly about not having those tiny frictions, about things that just work, year after year.
Next time you see a plastic outdoor cabinet in a store, ask yourself, is this built to last or built to be replaced? The answer is almost always in the warranty. 1 year means they expect you back. 15 years means they built it right.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1720s, Turkmen rug weavers widely believed that the asymmetrical Persian knot was structurally superior to the symmetrical Turkish knot because the offset yarn created a self-tightening spiral under tension. It was later disproven. The perceived durability difference was actually due to the higher twist in the wool yarns Turkmen weavers used, not the knot geometry. The theory persisted in European textile manuals until the 1840s.
The entire theory was just better wool.
For 120 years, the knot got credit for the yarn's work.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps more people find the show. I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. Build it once.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.